Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Wild Wild Web. I hope your journeys on the digital frontier are going well this week. In this second episode, I had the great pleasure of interviewing Ark Legger, current studio design director at Lethos Entertainment, whose previous work helped popularize the battle royale genre we all know and love today. Topics we touch on in this episode include the future of Web3 gaming narratives, his work at H1Z1 up to today, how projects can build better game economies, as well as his bullish case for Otherside, Bored Ape Yacht Club, and 10KTF. Just a quick note, nothing you hear in today's interview should be construed as financial or legal advice. I'm excited to get into this episode. I hope you enjoy it. Our vibe, our tribe. We're live now. I'm happy to have Ark Legger sitting here in the Wild Wild Web studio. We were just mentioning it. It's late here. It's 11:30. I just got done watching the Lakers get swept, unfortunately. But yeah, man, I'm excited we can make this one happen, because for a second there, I was like, oh, is it going to happen? But yeah, I needed to have you on the podcast, man. Ark, you're a prolific game designer, so really excited to talk a lot of things Web3 gaming with you and all that good stuff.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me. I mean, I love talking about this stuff. So this is just like, might as well just be in a Discord server right now.
Facts. I love that. So we're sitting in a Discord server, and you get a guest that pops up on stage and asks, is the Web3 gaming narrative completely dead?
Ooh. Has it even started? I don't even know if we've even started. Like, there's still so much to do. To say that it's dead is quite premature, I would say, if people think that it's dead and there hasn't even been like a wave yet. I would say we're just getting going. The first phase of NFTs were definitely art based, you know, and there's only so much you can do with a 2D image, and people were trying to add utility to that. But as smart contracts have evolved, there's a lot you can do now with dynamic NFTs and things like that. So I feel like this next bull run of NFTs isn't going to be art again. It's going to be games. So it might take a little while, because it takes a while to make games. Generative art doesn't take as long. AI isn't quite there yet for just a solo individual with not a lot of experience to just make a game. So you still need the professionals to kind of use AI and these tools to help make a game more quickly, but still a lot of work. So I feel like that's what's happening right now. You know, myself included, I work at a Web3 game company that focuses on bridging the gap between traditional Web2 game users and Web3 users. So we're creating games, and a lot of other people are too. You know, Yuga obviously is doing a huge project with their Meta RPG and Otherside. And there's just a lot of solid projects out there. You're starting to see some of the big guys come in now too.
Yeah, I want to stay on this topic with Web3 gaming and that narrative, and also make our way to the other side. But before that, I want to get into your background on what you've been doing for, you know, the last 20 years, right? Like you said, you've been doing live media content. So we're not live now, but you have experience there. But it's really in that game design front and what you've been doing in that time to lead up to your experience here today developing games in Web3. So could you give that brief rundown?
Yeah, I used to love this question, because I'd be like, man, this is my time to talk about myself and shine. Now I hate that question, because I'm like, I'm getting old. I'm getting to the point where I've done a lot of things now, and it's starting to make me feel old. But yeah, I've been in the industry since 2007, worked my way up from game tester all the way up to creative, you know, director, essentially. And so there's a lot of steps in between. And so I've leveled up each one throughout the last 17 years. And I've learned a lot through watching other people's mistakes. I've learned a lot through watching my own mistakes. And I've learned a lot on some of the things that have been successful too. But it seems like the mistakes you always learn a lot more from.
We often characterize things that happen in crypto in like waves or cycles, right? You had like DeFi, you had NFTs. Does that happen in gaming? Is there a cycle of like free to play games, and then there's a cycle of mobile games? Do gamers look at it in that way, or do game designers look at it in that way?
We had two, at least in my lifetime, we had two major jumps. We had the cycles of graphics, so it went from like pixel to 8-bit to 16-bit to 32-bit to one studio, and then it's PlayStation, and then PlayStation 2, and then, you know, the console jumps were just epic. Xbox 360, and each one that came out was more epic than the last. And so that was kind of like waves, and then it kind of stopped because you can only get so graphically intense before it doesn't really matter as much. The longer time frame of graphic intensity, you know, kind of needs to bake. But the second wave is business models. The business models have changed, and they come and go in waves like that, where first it was $60, you know, to buy a game for a long time. That's what it was. You're making a game, $60. Maybe you can charge 70, but people won't buy it. You can charge 50 and try to get a bunch of people to buy it. Like, those were like the metrics. And then it became subscription. Subscription was the name of the game. That was World of Warcraft and EverQuest, and those were all the MMOs. The MMOs figured out that if you charge a subscription, like a cell phone, you can just bring in way more money than charging one box copy one time for $60. And then people figured out ads and revenue and data, and that was free to play. That's the monster that got us to where we are today. I feel like free to play and selling users' data, just people got so attached to that on the, not from the gamer side, but the developers, like money making side, just like all the data that we gave away for free. You know, I think out of all the data that I personally have given away, at least Google, like, I use, you know what I mean? Like, at least I still use Google Maps.
Yeah.
But like, I don't use Facebook. I gave them so much data. I don't use, there's probably a ton of other ones out there, but like, it's just, that was the business model. And so now the business model's changing again, but people don't really know what to do. Like, play to earn was this like very easy way to do it, but you can't just like create your own economy. The economy has to come from somewhere. There has to be time spent into it and built. And so I still think play to earn's semi-viable if the economy that you're in, like, it takes a long time to earn what you're doing. There's like a lot of hours sunk in. I like to call it proof of gameplay. If you can show the proof of the gameplay on chain that something took a lot of time to do, then you can earn off of that. But I don't think it's directly play to earn, like you're getting a paycheck, because that requires, just like the government, to continually print tokens, right? Print money. You can't just, like, you can't just cap your tokens and have a play to earn game. You're going to run out of money. I still think it's a viable business model, but the game has to, like, it has to be a really solid economy, almost to the where it's like equaling a economy of a real country.
Yeah, it almost feels like there needs to be a game before the token's release, because if you launch a game with the token, you attract a bunch of mercenary behavior and all these things. But that, you know, I could take this conversation 1,000 different directions, but since you're on that play to earn topic, would you say that's the number one reason a game like, you know, in that first wave, Axie Infinity, for example, is that the main reason it failed, or can you point to others?
I think that there's probably a bunch of reasons all put together. I've noticed that it's rarely ever one thing. There's always the one thing everybody can see, but there's so many hidden variables that we don't know about that go on the inner workings, the email chains, the Slack conversations, the moment-to-moment decisions, the meetings. Like, so many things can tank a project just based off of, like, it's actually pretty amazing how quickly a one decision can tank something. And it's scary. It's like, the higher up you go on the chain, the more you have to realize that your words mean so much. And so, like, when you're like the CEO of a company and you're saying, you know, well, maybe we should do this, when you weren't a CEO and you were just a normal person at a company and you say, hey, maybe we should do this, everybody kind of processes it and goes, yeah, maybe. But when you're the CEO, people take that as, oh, that's what he wants to do. He said, maybe we should do this. Did you guys hear that? And then they start listening to that. And then the guy later goes like, what? You did that? I just said, maybe we should do this. So it's like people who are in that position need to like recognize that their words mean so much more. And so that's when you start to see, you know, I'm not saying that's what happened at Axie Infinity. I'm just saying that like, you never really know the whole story.
I want to track back a bit, and you were talking about free to play and in the kind of phases or cycles that gaming scene. You were a big part of that, and I think that's a fascinating story with H1Z1. That was just this proliferation of a game model, right, or a game feature, or however you want to talk about it. Just talk about that, man, because I want to nerd out just for a second.
Yeah, so it's a cool story. I'll try to keep it simple, but basically, a group of us were making H1Z1, the survival game. And we had this really solid business model to go directly after DayZ, because we saw DayZ as a fun game that's super clunky and hard to, like, you like literally install viruses on your computer to get it to run back then. And we saw an opportunity to make it mainstream. So we were making DayZ clone basically as a mainstream accessible zombie survival game. And I was watching Lyric, this OG Twitch streamer, and he would always start his morning at the same time that I started my morning. So it'd be like 9 a.m., 10 a.m., he'd start his stream, and he would play like three games every morning and then play one game for a really long time. And one of the games that he played every morning for like 30 minutes to an hour, he'd play like one, maybe two games, was this game called Battle Royale. But it was on Arma 3. And the servers, like, it would take like 15 minutes to start one game. Like, there wasn't everybody, nobody played this game. Like, there wasn't that many people. And in fact, PlayerUnknown, who was the original creator of the mod, was about to shut the servers down. Like, he was barely getting enough money to host the servers. And so we kind of looked at it and went, this game mode looks really fun. It's just nobody plays it because it's on Arma 3. And if anybody doesn't know about Arma 3, Arma was contracted to make a military simulator, and it turned it into a video game. So it's like, you literally have to do everything. It's like, holster your weapon, take it out, put ammo in it, put it in, reload it. And it's like, all those are different buttons. And you're just like, this is not fun. It's just super hard to play. So we were like, hey, we're making this really easy to play survival game. Why don't we just make this really easy to play battle royale game too? And it didn't go over well. People internally were like, that's a stupid idea. Like, why would we do that? We're making a survival game.
Isn't that crazy?
It always happens that way. It's hard for people to see your vision, right? Like, if somebody just speaks to you, you don't know what's going on in their head, right? It's like looking at a piece of paper instead of looking at a movie. Like, you just can't see it. So it's hard for people to really get the idea at first. But then once we built it and played it, it was a no-brainer. It was like the funnest. The first internal Battle Royale play test was just bonkers. People would...
This eventually led to games like Fortnite. Like not trying to get to like that, but led to those.
Yeah, so basically our game was the first mainstream battle royale title. So like there was like little mods, like DayZ even had a little Survivor Games mod, Minecraft had this little sort of Hunger Games mod, but like nobody had a mainstream hit with this yet. Nobody took it to that level. And so we were at a company where we were able to do that. And so because we did that, yeah, it took over the gaming scene for like the next, still today. It's crazy how many battle royale games there are. And to think back to be like how close it was to just having the server shut down back then, if we didn't actually bring it to mainstream, where would we be right now is kind of an interesting thought.
I feel like there's an interesting parallel with Web3 gaming there where we're all asking, when is COD going to introduce NFTs, or when is Fortnite going to introduce NFTs? And it's really not those large behemoth projects that attempt things like this. Am I along the same mindset?
You're totally right. I've had this debate with a lot of people, and you can tell at which point they actually actually care, like they actually want to learn about blockchain, and at which point they just don't care. But for the people who actually care, it always gets to the same end. So we go back and forth, back and forth. What about this? Well, what about that? Yeah, well, I got you here. What about this? And then it finally gets to, why would they do this? Why would they willingly decentralize and give up power and give up all their revenue? Doesn't make any sense. And I don't have a great answer for that. On just that, I could say, yes, you are right. Does not make sense for them to do that. That does not mean what they're doing is right. Mm-hmm. What they are doing is controlling all your data, making it so you can't play except in their little closed little sandbox. And anything that they do and you want to do outside of their sandbox, it's a big no-no, right? So that's the part that irks me, is how centralized it all is. And so in order for it to actually become what we all want it to be, other companies, our company, you know, other Yuga, we have to be the leaders in the space to show gamers that it doesn't have to be this way, right? You're not gonna, you're humans through time, if they have an advantage over other humans, they're not gonna just give that up. Why would they, right? Somebody has to like literally force them to give up the power. And so the best way for us to force the hand of the big players is to just do it ourselves and to show gamers, look, you don't realize that you're trapped in this little cyclical centralized circle, but it can be so much better than that.
Yeah, people were giving a lot of, you know, pun intended, shit to Dookie Dash, and I think they overlooked what that $1 million key actually meant, right? What the gamer was actually able to achieve. That, you know, he's a pro gamer, I believe, in just the Web2 sense, a traditional gamer, and he was able to earn $1 million by playing this Web3 game, and it wasn't dilutive to the network. It didn't have all these different factors that Axie Infinity have, where you can have one big whale come in and maybe mess up the ecosystem. It didn't have those negative effects. It was strictly positive, in my opinion. So do you like that Dookie Dash implementation?
I was like a staunch defender of Dookie Dash, even with people that are some of my peers in Web2 gaming that are still in Web2 gaming were just like so hate, like such haters, but it was like such jealousy. It just felt so weird because who cares if they made a game, like who cares if they made a game where you just how is that affecting your life at all? Like, it just was so funny to me. It's like, if Web3 is so dumb and it's so like not the future, then why do you care that they did this? So there's something there. There's something definitely there. But really, to point at to something factual, that is a big, big metric that I think is very bad, that the big guys are looking at, is how they were able to penetrate the pros, like Fortnite and Call of Duty and Blizzard. These guys they spend a lot of money getting these games just right to get these pros to come in and play at this high level. And they were probably just like, what did they do? This is like such a basic game. Oh, they were giving away this. They understand. Oh, they're giving away this one of one item, and there's only one, and all these people are rooting for it. I understand. Like, that makes sense to them. Might not make sense to the gamers, but I'm telling you, to be able to just get all the Fortnite pros to play your game like that,
yeah,
that doesn't happen. Like, that doesn't. People spend like millions of dollars on marketing, paying Twitch streamers and paying for ads and paying for to get pros to come play their game, or they'll literally pay the pros to play it for a few hours directly. So the fact that they were able to just do that means A, the game was actually fun enough for them to want to do it, and B, there's something there that they like. There's something that the pros may not be able to say it publicly because they're afraid of losing their fan base, or having part of their fan base don't like kind of question why, but they clearly saw some behavior there that was like, I'm one of the best gamers in the industry. I'm dealing with a bunch of people who are not gamers, and they want to pay me to play for them to get a better score. Like, that is a job. In my opinion, that's a job. If I don't know how to fix my yard and I want people to plant certain flowers here and tree here and make sure the grass is nice and cut, I pay them to do it because I don't want to do it myself. How is that any different than paying somebody who's the best at their game at a game to play for you to give you a better score?
I was just about to bring up an analogy that I saw on Twitter and I realized it might have been yours. Someone was equating what happened with Dookie Dash and Sewer Passes to the horse races where like high net worth individuals will buy horses, right? Or like they and then have someone else race them, you know? So I think that there was a cool analogy in there.
Yeah, I think the analogy was horse trainers pay jockeys tons of money to race on their horse. And if your jockey is cheating or sucks, that's not the horse track's fault. That's your fault. It's your horse. You're the one who paid the fee to race that horse and race that jockey. And if your jockey sucks or lied to you or cheated, that sounds like a problem between you and your jockey, not the horse track or the racetrack. And I think people were trying to like force Yuga to do something, like devs do something. And I'm just laughing like, you guys need to understand what Web3 and owning your own stuff means. That means you're in charge. That means you have to be responsible. You don't get to like call up Facebook and Apple and complain. Like that doesn't work that way in Web3. So if you want to be responsible enough to own your own stuff, then you got to do your due diligence if you're going to just pay somebody to use your horse.
A question that I want to kind of get into is based on you saying that the dev studios are watching what's happening with what Yuga's building with the other side or Dookie Dash 100%. Or what have you. I'm interested in how the Counter-Strike market has picked up over the last like what's seemingly like 2 to 3 months. Like there's skins being bought up for six figures now. I don't think that was happening prior to 2023. What is the reason for that? And, you know, is that kind of I'm just interested in why this is happening now and what that means going forward.
Oh, how the turntables. That's all I have to say. I think it's so great and it's so funny because Steam has had this like centralized Steam marketplace. We had to do that. We were on H1Z1. We were one of the first major games to also use the Steam marketplace for skins. And we did them like CSGO. We had crates and keys and skins. And it was quite the experience, let me tell you that. Like, you had to play by their rules it was their rules or the highway, right? And you couldn't sell for dollars. You had to sell into Steam money that you can use to buy more Steam games. There was a limit on how much you could actually make. And I think back then it was like $450 or $500 or something. You couldn't make more than $500 or they wouldn't even let you. Like imagine going to OpenSea and you can't sell your NFT for more than 0.25 ETH. Like that's the max. And so I think people are finally starting to realize, oh, this sucks. This is really bad. Like I spend $10,000 on skins and the most I can make is $500. So I think people are starting to finally realize like, hey, if I can NFT this skin and trade it with somebody else, then they're technically,
is that what's happening?
They're technically breaking terms of service. Cause I think they're sharing they're basically selling it and then trading it for free. But the transaction happens in the third party somewhere else.
Oh, see, I didn't know this was.
But that's how. But that's how you get scammed.
Like, true.
That's exactly how you get scammed. If I'm gonna go on there and be like, I would never do this, obviously. But it's like I'm gonna go on there and say, I'll buy your skin for $100,000. It's listed for $120, but I'll buy it for $100,000, and that's when the scam starts. Okay, yeah. Well. Blah, 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 blah. Here, click this because this is da-da-da, and they just steal it from you. Or they just get you to send it to them and they don't actually pay you.
That's what's actually been keeping me away from the Ordinals situation. I saw that like Ordinals on Bitcoin were like being traded OTC. Like all of these like original Bitcoin Ordinals, I was like, no, thank you. I'm not going to go to some shady corner of Discord to get a Bitcoin Ordinal.
Yeah, most people are fine. Like most people... But it's like it's that one person, right, that ruins it for everybody. And that's why we can't trust stuff that's not in a smart contract. That's why we can't trust stuff that's not actually on chain. Like, the only time I would ever do over-the-counter trades is if I knew you IRL and we were like homies. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's the only way I would do it. And you could still scam me and just stop talking to me. But it's very dangerous. This is why Steam knows this is these companies are in a hard space. Like, they know that they can't go a full NFT because they would lose a huge part of their revenue just because of how many people don't like the idea around being, you know, the narrative around they think it's a waste of money or it's a scam or that it's hurting the environment or that it's like there's all these horrible narratives that aren't even true anymore that they still grab onto.
Yeah.
But, and so Steam can't just be like, hey guys, we're turning on Ethereum, you know? So what's going to likely happen is they'll make their own chain and it'll still be centralized. And they'll be like, look, they're NFTs on chain. And it's just a centralized blockchain that they control. So, that's the next phase. So we're gonna have to do even more education because people are gonna be like, look, I have NFTs. And no, you don't, you just have the same thing that you can't trade out of their ecosystem. It's just verifiable and immutable. So that's, I guess, a step in the right direction.
Okay, I appreciate you schooling me on that Counter-Strike situation, because I didn't even know it was not happening on Steam, that they had that cap. I thought that they were just like selling these for exorbitant amounts on the Steam marketplace. I was like,
there's
wow,
no,
that's
way.
Changed. Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah.
Yeah, Steam would have to KYC everybody.
You're right.
They would have to, like, there's no way.
It'd be like a money laundering. They would like come under the yeah. jurisdiction of the, yeah. Okay.
There's no way.
So I want to get to a couple other questions. When I was doing a little bit of research for the interview and looking at your profile on Lithos, which I want to eventually get to, it was talking about you having experience teaching, I guess, like having experience on how to correctly spectate a game. And I thought that like stood out to me as being like an interesting work experience piece, like how to correctly spectate a game. Break that down for me.
So I was very lucky, blessed. This is like a blessing, honestly. This was probably some of the funnest time I've ever had in my career. We were running a tournament for Battle Royale. Now, in the marketing meeting, had I known how much work I just given myself, I probably wouldn't have pitched it the same way, but I was like, how sweet would it be if we took all the influencers and streamers and everybody who's popular playing our game and we put them all in one tournament and did a Battle Royale Invitational? And marketing was like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's start doing it. I'm like, okay. And so like halfway through curating the list, this like feeling, like sinking feeling that went like, wait, we have to like show this. We have to like run this as a tournament. How are we going to show Battle Royale? It's not like League of Legends. League of Legends is such an easy game to spectate in comparison. There's action up here, here, mm-hmm. here, maybe in the jungle. There's only 10 players. If they die, they respawn. So even if you miss a death, you can still always catch the next one. Battle Royale, if you miss a death, they're out of the game. Like, you can't miss a death. Like, you can't, if you have Dr. Disrespect in your game, you can't not show that, right? And so there's 100 people in the game and the map is massive. Like, imagine trying to spectate a football game, but there's 30 football games happening at the same time and it's across the entire state of California. Like, that's insane. And that's what a Battle Royale game is. And so us trying to spectate it was an impossible task. It was literally an impossible task. There's no way we were going to set up to be successful. I didn't tell the guys that. I just went, this is what we got to do. So we put our team together and we just went to work. And I made sure that the guys that I had initially all had sports experience, at the most sports experience they could possibly have. Because guys who understand sports understand the timing, the nuance, the switching, the replays, they just get it, right, inherently from watching so many sports. So that was like step one. And so we were kind of trying to emulate a live sports broadcast, you know, and so the work, I'm so proud of that team, because the work that we did, nobody taught us anything. We had to just figure it out. We were the first Battle Royale game. We were the first ones to do spectate and show a tournament in Battle Royale at that scale. And we had to just figure it out, man. And and we did. If you look back to the early Battle Royale games, they're rough. They're really rough. But if you look to like the last few that we did, the Elite series was another really good one that people kind of forgot about because there was so much like hoopla around the league, the pro league, because the pro league kind of happened as the game was also kind of dying. So it was just bad timing all around. But those games were spectated really well. And the work that we put in that project, we saw the other guys copying us. We kind of had it. We're like, I bet you PUBG and Fortnite are kind of watching our games and copying us. And we would do little things. So we'd be like, okay, let's do something on this game. And then let's watch and see if they do it at their next tournament. Every time. It was like we got confirmation that they were watching us and learning from us. And that felt good. It was like, cool. At least we're getting some respect, right? When before it was so much like, we're just going to take your lunch and make the game underneath you and take all your players. But the little respect that we did earn was from those spectating matches. Like, yeah, they definitely learned from us, which was cool. It's kind
of you know, I'm a big sports fan, of course, and it is cool seeing that aspect of esports come along, which is like now they have awesome shoutcasters. They have amazing spectation of all of these games, and they're shown in, you know, huge arenas, and everyone's having a great time. And it's cool to think that you had a hand in making that happen. So.
Yeah, super proud of it. Very, very proud. I'm almost more proud of that and what that team was able to do under the circumstances than the game itself, because it really was an impossible task that we somehow pulled off.
Okay, so I've got you for about 10, 15 more minutes, hopefully. Shut it off whenever you think you have to run.
This is great.
So we've touched on, you know, Battle Royales. We touched on some shooters as well, I believe, in Counter-Strike. My big, like, aha moment with gaming happened multiple times, you know, as I was, you know, a young kid, you know, as I grew up, but MMOs were a big experience for me. RuneScape was one, but really World of Warcraft like took it to the next level when you can hop into that environment and experience the IP that you had been playing in Warcraft 2 and Warcraft 3, and then now you're the actual character. Like, it was just a mind-blowing experience. And, you know, I want to see the MMOs do extremely well in Web3, and I think that's the narrative that people think of when they think of like metaverses and this is what Web3 gaming is going to be. But is it going to be a large scale open MMO that takes off first? I know Yuga's trying to do it, so we're going to hop into that one. But is it going to be those types of games that really take us to the next level? Or is it going to be mini games? Is it going to be shooters? Is it going to be potentially RTSs or strategies? I'm interested in this concept because, again, most people think open world metaverse. They think Ready Player One, and like that's what Web3 gaming is going to be, or what the metaverse is. And I'm not necessarily, you know, sold on the fact that these are going to be the games that lead us to mass adoption.
Yeah, so that's a hard question. The people who think it's going to be Ready Player One have to realize that Ready Player One is simulating like thousands of metaverses all connected together at the same time. Like all those little places that they jump in and out of, that's never going to be one game. Like, unless AI, like, sure, if AI gets to a point where they're so fast at creating everything so much, and there's like the computing power that it takes to do that can be done, then sure, all of that could probably fit in one metaverse, one game, right? But that's really what's more likely is everyone who's building their virtual world right now is going to all connect together, and you're going to be jumping from one event to the next event to the next event to the next event, right? Imagine in real life if you and I, you know, be like, hey, you want to hang out next Saturday? Cool. What do you want to do? Well, how about we eat lunch in Tokyo, and then we hop over to Lisbon and go check out an event there, and then we'll end the night in Rome, and then maybe at the end of the night we'll go to Los Angeles, right, and party. There's a rooftop party. That's the metaverse, right? That's what we would do right now if we could teleport, you know? And so my opinion, that's more Ready Player One is connecting everything together. All these virtual worlds that are the best versions of their virtual world connecting together, just like in real life. If you want to go eat good Thai food, you got to go to the best Thai food spot in your place, right? You're not going to get it at the one-stop shop store that has all the food places. So
Interesting. So the other side, of course, is like this attempt at building an open world MMO. That's what Yuga has tied, itself to. And I think there's a discussion in there that maybe we could potentially have on BAYC going this route. Like when I first got into BAYC, I had no idea that this was the route they were going to take, that they were going to go like full on. It was more of like a cultural movement, right, than it was a gaming movement at that time. So I think maybe there's a combo in there, but let me know like your thoughts on the other side as it stands today. I mean, that's a big question, but I experienced both the first and second trip. I think it's been, somewhat of a success to this point. So I'm interested in your takes.
Yeah, thanks. I'm really happy to answer this question, actually, because I really feel very passionately about it. I wish I knew what they were doing when I bought my Bored Ape. Because if I knew what they were doing, I would have bought as many as I possibly could, man. Like, I bought my Bored Ape because I was trying to guess the trends, and I just got out of DeFi, and I just got done making my own NFT game on Wax called Cogs, KOGS, which is still a game being played today.
Can I stop you for just a second? Because I think that's where we first met. Like, it was literally like 3 years ago. You hopped on the channel and like we're talking about Cogs, but that's awesome. Keep going.
Yeah. So like I already made an NFT game, before they even blew up. And so I was just kind of following the trends. People were like, hey, Top Shot. I was like, okay. And then people were like, hey, OpenSea. I was like, oh, okay. And so I bought an ape, a cat, a whale, and a elephant like the same day. That was how I got in. But dude, if I knew that I was buying something, these guys were such OG gamers, like I didn't know. But like then by the time I found out that they, were making this, when that deck leaked, right? That was, I remember where I was. I wasn't at my house. I know that for sure. But basically I remember looking on my laptop being like, oh my God, look at this deck. Holy shit, they're actually going to build it. Like, they're actually going to do it. And at that moment, it was too late to get in. It was like apes were like, at that point when that deck came out, I think apes were like 80s, 90s, something like that. Maybe it was lower, but I just remember it being a lot. There's definitely wasn't like 3 or 4 ETH or 2 ETH, right?
Yeah.
And so those guys, this is passion for them. You have to understand the founders. Playing World of Warcraft for 10 years, like how many people listening, if you're watching this, when you're watching this, think about how many things you've done for 10 years, right? That means that you have a lot of passion for it and you've mastered it basically. And these guys want other people to feel what they felt, right? They probably had the times of their life playing this game for those 10 years. And NFTs and virtual worlds and metaverse, open world metaverse, all this stuff is just like setting us all up for a really good next level MMO. And I think these guys really want to show everyone how fun they can be and how fun their version of it can be, because they're not just going to remake World of Warcraft. That's just like a layer of the lasagna, right? Then there's going to be live events and festivals inside the other side. And there's going to be the Bored Ape Yacht Club place where all the apes are going to hang out every night. Dude, we're going to be there every night. Why would you go anywhere else? If you own an ape, why wouldn't you go into the other side, into the center swamp, add into the Bored Ape Yacht Club, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's just going to be cool to hang out there. There's going to be all the other games that people make on their lands, right? So it's like, it's not just a game. It's just, that's just one piece. And there, the other side to me is going to be like, if you combined Fortnite and EDC and World of Warcraft all together in the same, and things are happening all over the place and you can jump between them. Right. And it's just like,
so slightly bullish on the other side here.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say a little bullish.
I mean, I'm going to steal your analogy here, but there's a lot of layers to this, to this topic, right? But like, so I'm going to try one by one, but what are your thoughts on the first and second trip? How they pull that off? Being a game designer yourself.
Incredible. Like, mind blowing. You're running the game on a browser. your crappy potato PC, you don't have $3,000 to buy an amazing PC, and you're getting to play this game on your browser. Like, just that alone is incredible, right? So the tech stack that they used with M2 and Improbable, those guys are really leveling up their game right now, because that's going to hold it all together. And so there's a lot of pressure on them to make sure that that works. That's just step one. Step two, people are showing up.
Yeah.
It is not easy to get 10,000 people at the same time in your game. It's not easy. I've tried multiple times with a lot of different game launches. I remember there's a game that I worked on, Free Realms. We launched it. 300 people showed up.
Mm.
That was the launch of the game. So when you see 10,000 people, 7,000 people, whatever, even if it's 5,000 people, and they're all running around and showing up, dude, that's good news. It's definitely better than having nobody show up. Dude, imagine if second trip, nobody showed up and there was like 25 people in there.
Yeah, that's a sell moment.
GG. Everyone would have sold everything instantly. So...
yeah, they're in this weird portion now where they've chosen a route. You know, like a lot of NFT projects, although now we're in the middle of the bear, so everything's kind of, you know, bumping downwards, at least in price action. But not doing anything is easier on a project, because now if they're building a game, there are specific things that people can point to saying, you're not hitting on those things, you're not doing this, you're not doing that, and they put themselves out there by doing that.
Yeah, so that's the next level that I want to see personally, because this is where I can't defend them. I'm a big cheerleader for Yuga because I love what they're doing, and literally everything that they're about with decentralized open metaverse. These are terms that are really good terms. You're going to see centralized closed metaverses, like that's Steam, right? That's Blizzard. Those are centralized closed metaverses. Fortnite, Epic. I have some faith in Epic that Tim Sweeney will make the right decision and do an open metaverse, but they're going to all try to be closed metaverses first, centralized. They're doing decentralized open metaverse from the very beginning. That's some baller OG shit, man. Like, just saying it. It really is. So super bullish on what they're doing.
Yeah. Another aspect of this, ApeCoin, of course, thoughts on ApeCoin being utilized in the other side. Game economies are hard to pull off. You mentioned it in the first 10 minutes of the show. And your thoughts on possible utilization for ApeCoin. Is it going to be an in-world currency that we see with like World of Warcraft, where we have gold? What are your thoughts on ApeCoin's utilization? And I'm going to add one piece to this. The one thing I can't kind of wrap my head around is with NFTs implementation into games is the large value assets that current users already hold that new users aren't going to be able to access. I feel like is a kind of interesting conundrum. So I know that's a two-part question, the Ape token utility piece, but also how do game economies work with NFTs where new users might feel like, oh, all the people that are already here have all the money?
Yeah, so the first part of your question, ApeCoin's an interesting beast because there's real world value too. Like you can go into Gucci and use ApeCoin and buy stuff, and that's not going to stop. I think that they're going to like make that for McDonald's and Starbucks and Best Buy and Walmart and Target. Wow. That's just what they're going to do. Why wouldn't they do it? And with each one they secure, it's more likely that they'll secure the next one, right? Nobody wants to be the first, and then all of a sudden, nobody wants to be the last. So it just like ApeCoin on its own, even without the other side, I think it's going to be fine. As long as Bored Ape Yacht Club stays true to who they are, ApeCoin will be fine. But in the metaverse, like in the actual ApeCoin universe, it's going to be a powerhouse if the game's good, right? If people are actually showing up to the other side every night, hanging out, partying, buying stuff, just having fun, then you're going to need ApeCoin, right? You're going to need money to turn into ApeCoin. So is it the best investment of all time? Who knows, right? Probably not. There's probably other things you could buy that nobody knows about, and then they're going to 1,000x and you know, but is it a solid, like, good long-term investment? Not an NFA, but mm-hmm. I think so. Right. And I think that having a bag of ape is decent to just accumulate over time. So why would it hurt? At the worst case scenario, you become rich in other side.
That's like, fair.
Which is also fun. Yeah. Right.
So to the game economy question, do you have a take on that where it might seem like in an NFT game or based game, you have a small amount of individuals that control maybe the economy with the amount that they hold before the game even comes out?
Yeah, it's interesting. That puts a lot of pressure on the game being fun. These guys have a really hard task at making a fun game, which that's what I was going to say earlier. Like, I can't really defend these guys because I don't know a lot about the game. So when my gamer friends or other people ask me, yeah, but what's the game? There's like a coda and they have a weapon and like there's land and like there's resources and it's not a game. Right. So like we need more details around the actual game. And then I can defend them again with my friends. Right. So I can only speculate, and I'm like kind of speculation is a great way to say you're lying to them because you're just guessing. Right. But I can speculate that it will be awesome and there will be like alliance and horde, like World of Warcraft, the blue and the red codas. And there's this side and the other side and you go in between the two to get to the other one. And like, yeah, I can say all that, but I can't prove it. So I don't have anything to say about it from the game side, which kind of sucks.
So we're getting up to the end of the episode. I have a couple last questions to get to, and then I want you to shill Lithos a little bit. I'd love to hear what you got going on there. As far as the other side goes, there's a bunch of different IPs that are going to be involved. Like, that's another really cool thing, that you have multiple different communities that are going to be able to have their collection be featured in the other side. But 10KTF by far is like the most interesting, right? And it's also, you know, at that rate, the most complex within the other side and what it might be and what it already does. So just any, I hate to call it alpha, but like, what do you think what should somebody be looking at with 10KTF right now as it relates to them, their own project, but also the other side?
So first, I'll preface with, I'm going to give 10KTF a really hard time because I really believe in what they're doing. And so I'm holding them to a really high standard, like AAA Web2 standard. So if you ever see me talking about them like that, just know it's because I'm like, hey guys, you got like, what are you doing? Like, you guys are the guys. Like, come on. Like, what are you guys doing here? Like, you got to really tighten it up. And so they've been really good. Really, really good. They've made like very minor slip ups, and it's like little things like listening to the community too fast and catering to all the people complaining about something. And it's a very knee-jerk reaction to do. I've done it myself multiple times. It's hard to not do that, but it's like you have to remember that when you came up with the plan and the idea, you put a lot of thought and effort into it. And so the people who are just immediately barking at you really fast to change it to because they want their bags to get bigger or they want their thing to do better, you know, that's tough. And so little things like that. But anyways, 10KTF, like I said, are the guys. Like, these guys are, there's a reason why Yuga bought them. They are super smart in how they build. Low effort team, like low heavy lifting stuff. Like, they didn't have to make a whole video game. They made it a Web2 game, just clicking the UI, right? And they don't have to do big reveals because they just do little pictures once a week. So it's like they're doing the right way. But the to answer your question, you have to pick your entry point of how you're going to participate in the ecosystem. If you're just going to play their Battletown game, then you should only be buying the 10KTF profile stuff that has been stamped onto the blanks. And then you need a PFP to go with it. So if you have a Cool Cat or World of Women or a Bored Ape, then you have the gear, the backpack, the shoes, or whatever. That's what you should be buying because you're just participating in the game and those games will net you rewards and benefits. The next level up, you want to be the distributor. I want to be all the blank. I want to buy all the supply and be a distributor. So I'm going to buy the blanks and sell them to the people who want to stamp their PFP onto the blank. So I'm buying the blank backpacks, the blank shoes, the blank flamethrower, the blank, and now I'm a distributor and I'm actually doling out the supply to the people. Then there's the creators, the people who are making the blanks, and those are the people that hold the tools, right? I want to make the blanks. I want the material. I want the material and the tools. Like, I'm the person who makes the Gucci bag. You're the person that puts the print on the Gucci bag. And then the last person's the one who buys the Gucci bag, right? And so they have each level.
Sounds like you're in that third group. I'm in all the groups
because yeah. I didn't know how it was going to evolve. And then slowly now over time, I've become the tool / blank distributor guy, because mm-hmm. that's where I see myself. I see myself as the tool, and I would love to be the crafter of other side, one of the crafters, right? Like, because I have these tools, I'm able to craft very rare and special things for you, and you give me some ape coin and I have the materials and the tools to make your stuff into whatever. What if I can make Coda weapons because I have mm-hmm. these tools? What if I can make, you know, crazy good stuff in other side? That's what I really want, because then it's like a side hustle. I technically have like a side job that's making me money, and then the tools that I bought, you know, a couple years ago or last year, pay for themselves over time. They kind of already are paying for themselves, because you can stake them for ApeCoin. Mm-hmm. So if I leave them in there long enough, I'm already going to get my money back. But it's interesting. The analogy of 10KTF I like to use is they're like Wizards of the Coast. Wizards of the Coast does Magic the Gathering and Yu-Gi-Oh! or Hasbro does all that. But Wizards of the Coast does Magic the Gathering, and Pokemon copies them a lot too. But they have all those levels, right? They make the cards. They sell the sealed boxes to all the stores or to Amazon, right? And then we buy the boxes and we either hold them and sell them to other people. That's like trading NFTs. Or we open them and play them. That's playing the game. And then eventually when we're done with them, we put them on eBay and sell them. It's the same thing.
It's like a digital supply chain. Interesting.
Yeah. As soon as I made that connection with 10KTF, I was like, I'm investing. So
yeah, NFA folks. Okay, last question on the other side, then let's do some Lithos talk before you get out of here. But you know, with the complexity of the ecosystem over the last 3 or 4 months, like, now we can talk CODAs, other deeds, codependence, sediment. I mean, just like all in, like, any last thoughts on any of that we've seen from Legends of Mara, we've seen Heavy Metals, like, any last thoughts there to wrap that up? We got to have a round two, by the way. Whenever trip number three comes out, we'll get you on.
Yeah, I'm down. So it's hard because I'm such a cheerleader and such a bull on Yuga, but like, I really love I love what they're doing with evolving all of these games and other drops and stuff. People can call it dilution, but I think it's better than waiting 2 years and doing nothing and there's nothing to play or do. Like, your ape would be worth 20 Ethereum by now if they literally did nothing since the other side. Imagine if when they were like, oh, sorry guys, the mint failed. Well, guess we turned the lights off on Ethereum. Imagine they didn't do anything since then. Mm-hmm. Apes would be like 15 ETH. So it's good that they're doing stuff, because they're showing you that they're actually doing it. And so I like all the fun stuff we get to do leading up to the other side, because it does bring value. You know, people, we don't know, not everybody's on Twitter complaining, right? There's probably happy Bored Ape holders that are like, dude, I bought my Bored Ape and I've gotten to play in this stupid Dookie Dash and I have this Heavy Metal thing now, but like, whatever, like, this is kind of cool. We just don't know. Like, the silent majority, we don't hear. There's 30,000 apes, but there's probably only like 100 of us on Twitter every day.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great take, man. I got to play this back and I'm going to have some bullish thoughts as I dream tonight. But let's talk Lithos before you get up out of here. Again, I really liked your other side takes there, but you are in essentially development of a new game. You have a AAA gaming studio as well. Let me know what you're doing at Lithos and what you guys are doing with the Founders Key.
Yeah. So I joined Lithos. You can say Lithos. It's Lithos or Lithos. It's fine. It's okay. But I joined Lithos at, because I really believed in the CEO. Like, I wanted to make sure that my next gig wasn't a Web2 focused centralized company. And Michael Mumbauer, who's the CEO of Lithos, is very forward thinking. He was the guy who brought in basically champion mocap into Sony to get them to do mocap to make better cinematic game movies and games, basically. And so that was him. And back then everybody was telling him, this is going to steal all our jobs and this is the worst idea ever. And we're going to go on strike. And now everybody does mocap. So he saw Web 3 as like round two, same stuff, different story. And he put me in charge of the NFT pipelines. And so I'm kind of a pseudo founder. It's kind of interesting to be in this spot now. But we released a founder's token, only 1,000, not like 10,000 or anything. We wanted to start small. We only have 1,000, and it's on Hedera. The network that runs, it's on Hedera Sentient, is where we link people to. There's a lot of good marketplaces on Hedera, but that's the one that we personally link to. And so these founder's tokens are like Bored Apes to me. Like, you're going to get to participate in everything that we do. So if you have a founder's token and we make a game, you're going to get something in that game. We have make another game, you'll get something from that game. We do some IRL event, you'll get a pass to go to the IRL event. We have some funny, wacky idea that comes out of nowhere, we'll let you be a part of it, right? And so that's basically my experience with Bored Apes. I haven't had to buy anything since I bought my ape. They've let me be a part of the whole thing. And it's great. It's a great feeling. I'm super grateful and I've become a big cheerleader. And like, why wouldn't you want fans like that for your company? Why wouldn't you want people who are like happy and getting cool stuff and telling other people how cool the company is? So it just makes sense to me to take care of these founders and to like try to give these people who hold these founders tokens a lot of benefits. And who knows, you know, if they hold it long enough, I'm sure they'll get all their value back. That's the whole point of it, right? But it's not about flipping or making money. It's about being a part of something. Like being involved in the wave of the next era of gaming is like enough for me to be excited to champion it.
A lot of people have been hurting in this like long bear cycle, and you see people's theses be tested, but that was a really eloquent and simple way of explaining NFT's utility. Like at the end of the day, like you used a great example of the Bored Ape Yacht Club there as well. But I mean, that was just a really great way to explain the brilliance of NFTs. Is true ownership, right? True digital ownership, and the ability to have aligned incentives between the people that are in the ecosystem and the people who are creating the product. I think that you put it there very eloquently.
Thank you. Yeah, it's like it's a relationship that you have with your customers, right? It's on such a deep level. Like we just came out of this era where it's all about getting millions of people to do something, and you don't know anything about any of them. And instead it's like, hey, wouldn't it be better if you had like 1,000 to 5,000 people who really care about everything that you do and like support you every time you do something? This feels like a better way to start something.
So two quick lightning questions. One, a little bit about Ashfall would be great. The first game that's coming out under Lethos. And then that's my second question, is why Hedera, right? Why not go Ethereum? Why not go Polygon or one of these other choices?
Two great questions. So to answer the first question, Ashfall will actually not be the first game we release, because Ashfall is going to take a long time to make, and it costs a lot of money to make Ashfall. Ashfall is going to be a AAA powerhouse. And to make that, it takes years. It takes a lot of money. And in light, just like how it takes years and a lot of money to make Other Side, we want to do things for our players leading up to that. And so we have other things that we are working on and doing, not only to help us fundraise and get money for the company to make Ashfall, because it costs so much to make it. Look, people aren't just handing out $100 million checks anymore, $200 million checks. Like, that's not reality anymore. You kind of, if you go into a meeting, a VC meeting, asking for $200 million, they literally laugh at you. Like, but when you ask for $10 million, like, those are the things that are getting funded now. So we have really cool plans to give pretty awesome experiences to people who want to play some of the smaller things that we're doing leading up to the bigger things like Ashfall.
And those are not announced yet.
Those are not announced. It's real. I'm kind of breaking news, telling you just on here that there's other games and stuff, and all this stuff's going to come out soon. I would say June, probably you'll start to hear more about it. So it's May 22nd, so not too long. And Hedera because honestly, they're the ones giving us a shot. Like they're the ones who are giving us the ability to do this. And it's a great chain. The more I learn about Hedera, the more I love what they're doing. It's Ethereum is great, right? Ethereum's where the action is. Doesn't mean it's going to always be the best, right? And so isn't the point of all this for everything to be interconnected anyways? Like if I really wanted to go buy something, I'll figure out how to get on that chain and buy it. It's just like when EverQuest came out. When EverQuest came out, you figured out how to get your ass to the store to buy the graphics card to install it in your computer so you could play the game. So you just need, it's not an incentive. You need an incentive. And it doesn't matter if it's on Hedera or Ethereum or Solana or Tezos or any of these other chains. It doesn't matter. It matters. The content is what matters. So the first, there's so much opportunity out there. The first person that makes a really awesome game doesn't, I'm telling you, it's not going to matter what chain it's on.
I remember interviewing Jiho from Axie Infinity and they had that weird, or I say weird, but like this awesome movement where like people that had no business playing games or Web3 games at that were like downloading the game and playing it. Like you had entire households of mothers, uncles, grandmothers playing and downloading MetaMask and all these things. I'm like, I thought people don't do that. Like I thought grandmas are not gonna download MetaMask. He's like, well, the way that people have been onboarding their grandmothers, they have no incentive to do so, right? Like you're explaining your Web3 ideals and like this is the future, but really it came down to incentive. When Axie Infinity provided an incentive for them to do so, they did it. You know, they did it very easily, easier than people thought.
Look, we're humans. We're an incentive-based species. Like we're lazy. We don't want to be moved. Like do you think I really want to like get up and go to work to pay for my house payment? I don't want to do that. I have to do that, right? It's like there's an incentive there. Like if I didn't have to pay for anything and I could just be a lazy bum on the couch and play video games all day, I mean that was my teens. I already did that. So like it's as soon as you have an incentive to do something, you'll do it. And entertainment's a great incentive.
Arg, this has been a great conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, studio design director at Lithos, a new AAA gaming studio that I'm looking forward to follow as well as potentially pick up a founder's key. But Arg, you've been great on this conversation. Let them know where to find you. Let the people out there know any of your profiles. Go ahead.
So I really, if anything, just go to the website and check it out for yourself. Liithos, Lithos with two I's .com. And just explore. Just kind of, if you really want to know what's going on, just kind of see all the little buttons we have there and just check back every so often. Follow the Twitter account if you really want to see what's going on. Lithos Ent, E-N-T for Lithos Entertainment. And we're just getting started. I'm telling you, we should do a 1-year anniversary of this podcast to see how far we've come.
I can't wait, man. I can't wait. We'll do that. Hopefully, we might be even do that on the other side.
Yeah.
So, well, live in game.
And then we'll go hit up the Bored Ape Yacht Club.
True, man. All right. Sounds good. This was a great episode of the Wild Wild Web. We had Arg Lager on. Arg, you're always a great guest. And hopefully we can have that interview there on the other side.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
All right, man.